All right, David Diamante here, and we are back for another episode of Matchroom Radio. And this week we're in Liverpool. We have a big fight in Liverpool, and I've got just a great guest with me, the former WBA lightweight champion of the world, Mr. Anthony Million Dollar Crawler. Anthony, it's great to see you, brother.
David, good to see you as always, mate. Good to be here in Liverpool. Look forward to the bill on Saturday night.
Yeah, you're just about, what, 30 miles down the road? You're in Manchester.
Yeah, a little bit further off Manchester, but I'm here in under an hour. So, yeah 50 minutes and down here, but I'll be stopping over Saturday night. Hopefully, there's going to be a great party in here Saturday night.
I'll tell you what, this fight, it's a big fight. Liam Smith and Anthony Fowler. It's so exciting because obviously we got the big Tyson Fury fight and Deontay Wilder. Rubber match this weekend, but this fight is like more of a domestic fight, and it's a Liverpool derby.
Any kind of derby in, you know, a fighting city like Liverpool, there's a lot of spice that comes with it. But this is my pick of the fight. It's a great boxing weekend all around the world, but I think this is not just because of my relationship with the Smith brothers, but this is my pick of them, and I can't wait for it. It's a fantastic show. Just speaking to Eddie then, and there's around three or four fights where you go, that could be fight of the night. No, that could be fight of the night. Yeah. And that's how I see it. And I think, and then there's also the fights that you'll sleep on that could be belters as well. I don't think there's a bad fight on the card.
I like the Cheeseman Williamson fight too.
It's just, you think straight away, you think potential fight of the year.
Yeah. Ted Cheeseman just gives us so many great fights.
He's never in a bad fight. And Troy will have like a similar attitude. It's crazy. When I first met Troy, it's about 200 meters from here. My little brother was fighting on an amateur show. Troy was on the same show, and he come up to us after I was talking to him, and he beat a local lad from around there, and he'd done a real job on him, and I thought, I'll always keep my eye on him. And it's mad the way it comes round, you know, full circle. Yeah. I think it's around 7 or 8 years ago now, and he's got his big night here in the arena.
Undefeated, going for the Lonsdale belt. It's an exciting fight. The whole card is, you're talking about derbies, and they just bring so much excitement. You've been in them yourself. I mean,
yeah, I had a fair
John story. Murray in April 2014, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about that fight.
I had four or five of them over my career, but yeah, that was the most noticeable one for sure, me and John. It was, you know, David, me and John, we was mates. I mean, we are mates now. I was only speaking to him the other day, but there was a bit of history with it where, you know, when I moved gyms, I'd gone to the gym, and John was like sort of the top lad in the gym with Joe Gallagher. And to be honest, I learned an awful lot from John, and I got a fair few second prizes in sparring, you know, with him. But he brought me on, and I learned a lot from John. But then, you know, John and Joe at the time, they're good now, but, you know, they split up, and John went his own route, and the fight sort of just come round. And then I started, you know, my career really took off, and John called us out, and that was it. It was hard, you know, we was both with the same promoter, so there was no excuse. So it wasn't like I didn't want to fight John. I had a lot of respect for him, but it was sort of,
you kind of had
toes
to,
in a way, in like the local paper and, well, you know, the evening news, and that was it. So that's really how me and John was made. And yeah, like the fight itself, it went sort of to the letter how we expected it. But it was a tough fight, but it went exactly to the game plan.
You stopped him in round 10.
Yes, yeah, it was. I knew I'd have to, you know, I think John threw everything but the kitchen sink at me in the early rounds. But, you know, it was a great fight, and it was a great atmosphere. I think it was sort of split right down the middle, where even to the football teams, where John's a big Manchester City fan, I'm a big Manchester United fan, but there was people who bought tickets off me to come and watch me, but they'd also, they knew John longer, and people who'd normally go and watch John fight who got tickets off me. Like, there was a few people who, and John would have had the same, like, oh, Crawler, I'm there Saturday, but I've already got my tickets from John. Or John would have had the same word. John, you know, it's not like that, but I've got my tickets. And that was it. That was it. And we had a good fight. And we shook hands after it. And like I say, we're good mates.
How was it for him? Have you talked to him about it after? Like, because again, one of the things about this fight this weekend, I know, you know, Anthony Fowler, I'll tell you this, I got to give him a lot of credit because he had that huge fight with Scott Fitzgerald that we all saw. It was a great fight.
Yeah, brilliant.
It was a close fight.
Fantastic.
Until the end. But there was so much buildup on social media. There was so much vitriol. Yeah. It was incredible. You know, I'll never forget it. And then to lose that fight here in Liverpool in front of your home fans takes a lot of, you know, guts to come back.
It does. And it was sort of a bit of a humbling, really, because it was a very close fight. I think the strong finish from Fitzgerald deservedly got him the decision.
Sure.
But And I think he'll admit it now. I think with maturity, Anthony Fowler in the build-up, he was very vocal. It come back to bite him. Whereas this fight, and Liam's been very smart, as in, like, I know Liam well. He's one of my good mates, and he's gone, he won't try that with me because he's going to have to keep that up after the fight. Like,
yeah, that's
say,
right. Yeah,
you carry on that with me. Forget about all the boxing. I'm going to come after you.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And he would. I know that's how Liam is, but he's playing it very different. So I think maturity from Anthony is, I'm never going to get caught up like that. I probably overlooked Scott a little bit, and Scott played it to a blinder. I mean, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way. I don't know if Scott knew exactly what he was in. He's just a character, but it come back to bite Anthony. But it takes a lot of rebuilding because they almost become, you know, there's a lot of people, I know it sounds bad, but laugh, because it was a fantastic fight, but laughing at him thinking, no karma, come at you. You was very cocky in the build-up. Come back around, and I think he's matured an awful lot through it. So, but yeah, Saturday night, man. One of the things,
you know, talking about the talking, the Smith brothers, you know, Liverpool is, it's a working man's town, you know, and the docks, they've been through, this town's been through a lot.
Yeah.
It's a great city, and I love it.
It's a brilliant city, David. It's mad because obviously I'm up the road in Manchester, and the rivalry,
it's fierce,
but like everyone's always great with me up here and then with the lads, and you know, we'll joke and stuff, but like the football rivalry is like fierce, and sometimes it can even get a bit distasteful. But it's like with it, we're very similar people, like there's 50 miles or something that separates us, but no Mancunian admit it, and even no Scott, we're not like Manx, we're not like Scousers. That's just how it is. But we are sort of very similar, but it's a great set of this.
But what I was going to say is the people, you know, they're very proud people, and they're about people that do things, not really about talkers. Yeah. And the Smith brothers, they're like royalty here in this town. There's not one Scouser that you can talk to and not know about the Smith brothers, because they're very humble people. They work really hard, and they don't talk a lot. They do. You know, and so it is interesting seeing Anthony in the build up to this fight. I think we're going to see a different Anthony. I don't know how we'll see a different Anthony, but training with Shane, obviously, I think it's going to bring a new wrinkle. And I think it's very interesting. It was great hearing McNally, what he had to say up there on the podium.
Yeah.
But look, he was keeping it real. And he said, look, he jumped the line at the chippy.
Yeah.
You know,
Joe's like, I think they're two, you know, as a young coach myself now, they're two young coaches who respect massively. Obviously, Shane is doing unbelievable stuff, you know, with his camp. But Joe, we'll hear a lot more about Joe in the future. Joe was a very good fighter. I knew Joe since being a teenager. And he's got a great boxing brain. But I think you just mentioned it then. I think the Smith brothers, it's very unique what they've achieved from, you know, the amateurs right through. And even now, Paul's son's in the gym, and he's looking really well. He's in, like, the national quarterfinals. So I wouldn't be surprised if another national title gets added to that, you know, to that household. But, yeah, it's a special family in general, but a special boxing family, what they've achieved.
Really special. And they're folks. You know, it starts at the top, right?
Yeah.
And the mom is here, the dad's here. Wonderful people.
Lovely, lovely family. And, like, Big Paul, he's, like, I'm lucky enough to be his gym buddy. When we used to go away on camps, I want lads to find. I go in the gym with him every day, and it's the good people.
You talk about his son is now fighting. What about your son? You have a son, Jesse. Yeah,
My little lad Jesse he's just turned 8 actually.
Happy birthday to Jesse!
Eight. Yeah, earlier this month. Well, no, last month, but he's good. But he plays a lot of football. He plays an awful lot of football. So after we've done it, I'm going to shoot off, do the last little shakeout with Rhiannon Dixon, who I've got on Saturday night, and then Jesse's playing football. But it's mad. I think, dude, if you ask any fighter, like, well, 90% of them will go, I don't want my son doing it, or no, I don't want my daughter doing it. But I've sort of got my head around it to the fact that I know at some point he's probably going to want to step into the boxing gym and, you know, give it a go. And if he's a pretty athletic kid, he's only 8, but he's an athletic kid, so I think he'll probably be all right as well. So if that's the case, I certainly won't encourage it, but if he does, I'll just, do you know what I mean, I'll support it. But it's very hard. Like, I'd love it. I've said it with the Smith boys a few times, like, loving boxing at, like, schoolboy level, but then this side of things, There's some brilliant nights, but there's also some hard, tough nights, what you wouldn't wish on anyone.
There's hard graft.
Yeah.
A lot of hard graft and hard nights. Yeah.
It can be a brutal, brutal sport. And
sometimes it's even more brutal outside the ropes.
It's, yeah, totally. Without
the business,
a doubt.
The business side of it.
Things that can be brutal so too. Hard for people. And it's, I always say, David, about this sport, it's so hard because the lows are so low. Like I've seen like friends and stuff like that where I've cried for some of them away from them. Do you know what I mean? I've cried for some of them, but then the highs. The eyes are unbelievable, but
it's untouchable.
It's, yeah, it's horrible.
And you keep
time.
Trying to get him back there.
Of course, yeah. And then I always say it, like, that's why I think fighters who retire, they struggle because they can't, you know, you can't replicate that eye again. You know, I've never done no drugs, but I imagine, you know, you're chasing a high. So I think that's why sometimes there'll be boxers who turn to drugs to try and find highs. Do you know what I mean? Like it's.
I know a little bit too well. I mean, yeah. I've done a lot of drugs.
And you chase. No, but David, you chase that high, don't you? And
yeah.
I think you've just got to learn to. I think that was a big thing with me retiring. You've got to learn to accept that night's not going to come again. You've got to try and find your highs in different ways. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you know, I did a lot of drugs when I was young. I've been sober now. Coming up on 29 years. I've been sober 28 years, but it's coming up December 4th, my clean day. I'll be 29 years clean. Thank you, brother. But I find that I get higher off life than I ever did off drugs.
Yeah.
So I can attest to they're both crazy highs.
Yeah.
But the life highs are better. And to me, drugs are like a shortcut.
Yeah.
You know, it's like cheating.
Yeah.
You know, and you always gotta pay to play, right? Yeah. So as high as you go, that's as low as you're going to go too.
Yeah, yeah.
So down. Yeah, and also with the drugs, you know, it's like I feel like it's never as good as that first time. Whereas in life, when you do it for real and that's you work for those highs, they're sometimes even better.
I can imagine, Dave, like how hard you must have worked now to now you're like announcing the biggest fights in the sport. Do you know what I mean? And it's like I imagine, like you say. That's never going to get old because it'll be new fighters, new events, stuff like that. Whereas you just said then with the drugs, you've had the second time's not quiet. The quiet.
Yeah.
And
it, you're always chasing that.
Yeah. But the low probably gets deeper.
Yeah.
I think, do you know what I mean? I'd imagine so. So yeah.
Absolutely. Speaking of highs, there's so much I want to talk to you about, but because you were talking about training, I want to talk about Rhianna Dixon. I want to talk about Tasha Jonas, I want to talk Dylan Evans even.
Yeah, no, Dylan's not, he's not boxing no more, but I've got a few other fighters. Dylan's like my little mate, but it's just boxing wasn't for him in the end.
What happened? What happened with him?
It's hard because his
last fight was on the Brian Rose Fowler card.
It was. And Dylan's a good man, he's a family friend, but it's, I think, you know, especially when the pandemic hit him, you know, he has a lot of mates who like be earning money and stuff like that, and it's, boxing, that's what I'm saying, it's a tough sport. I always say to a lot of young professionals, you know, when you turn professional, unless you've got an Olympic medal or, you know, a real decorated amateur background, you've got to be prepared to be a little bit out of pocket.
Yeah.
A little skin sometimes.
Absolutely.
You don't realise it's not like signing a contract for a professional footballer or some other sports where all of a sudden, wow, you're earning good money. No, you... It's costing you to be a professional. You can go out and get a job and earn a lot more money. But, and that was it. I think that was sort of just part of it. But I've got a lad there now and he's not on the bill line, but he literally just trains and he just lives for that. He lives for that. But he's hoping one day all those sacrifices will be worth it.
There's that saying, it's like, we didn't come this far
to just come this far.
Like you kind of got to be 2 feet in or 2 feet out.
Yeah. And that was it. And I think, without making it about myself, as a professional boxer early on, like obviously I had the nickname Million Dollar.
Where'd that come from?
Do you know the film? It was just a film. Obviously, it rhymes with the surname, but Million Dollar Baby, Million Dollar Crawler, and it just sort of went with that. And then I was, you put me, what we're in this, or what, do you know, like, but I was calling myself that. I was driving round in like a finance course. I was driving round, do you know, with, I was living in my mum and dad's house. Like I was sharing brothers with me. I was sharing bedroom with my little brother and in bunk beds while I was calling myself Millie. I was totally winging it.
That's just to fake it till you make it.
Fake it till you make it. That's what I say, David.
Or that positive, kind of mind frame. Yeah. You know, you're one of those guys, like everyone knows you as like, you know, one of the great guys in boxing. You know, you really are.
Oh, thank you.
But and your story is so amazing. But like, I feel like, you know, you've had setbacks.
Massively.
The fires at the club.
Yeah.
Obviously the attack, you know, with the burglary. There's been tough times.
Yeah.
But you have persevered and you've come through. Is it just that mindset?
I think, yeah.
And where does that come from?
Do you know what it is, dude? I think it was always wanting to do my family proud and, you know, my friends. I always thought anyone who comes to watch me, I want to give them the best version of me.
Yeah.
But then, like, my family, like, I watched me, mom and dad, like, graft away for 30-odd years.
What do they do for a living?
Like, my dad's a postman. My mom works at a supermarket. And we never went without, like, I say it all the time, David, I think, and it's not me sort of calling other people, but I see some people claim, oh, you know, I had it tough and that. I can't say that I had it tough because my mom and dad gave me everything we needed.
They always provided.
I've seen how hard they worked.
Sure.
Do you know, like, they didn't have the two best paid jobs in the world, but they made sure everything for us. So I thought, I wanted to repay them.
Yeah.
I wanted to repay them. And I remember thinking, like, at one point, when the accident happened, the incident happened, I was, like, worried, thinking, oh, my God, I've only ever boxed. If I can't box no more, you know, I just had a little boy. Me and my partner, just a little boy, just moved in the house, and it's like bills have got to be paid.
Sure.
And it was like, it was pride as like a father, like I want to provide for them. So that was a big thing for me. So obviously after that, it was, I always worked hard, but it was like, I really, like, if I get a second chance, not everyone's lucky enough to get that second chance, I've got to make everything count. And it was a blessing in disguise, a strange disguise, like, but it was a blessing.
Well, you got a second chance with Darlys Perez.
Yeah. And that was, yes, and that was it again, where, again, I got a second chance with him. And I knew that night, David, like, if you could ask Edda, I don't really remember, but I always remember after the fight, he comes up to me and he says, Crawler, he says, I was like, before the fight, I was fuming because I thought, he's too calm. He's going to let this moment pass him by.
Eddie thought you were too calm.
Yes, but I knew, and I don't want to start talking or like, it was fate or this and that, but I just knew there was, I watched Liam Smith win a world title there a few weeks earlier, and I remember thinking, no, I've got to have the same feeling as my mates just had now of, you know, bring that world title back. And I was in the changing rooms, I thought, there's no way that I'm coming back here without that world title over my shoulder. Do you know what I mean? This is probably the only chance I'm going to get, and or the last chance I'll get. And I knew, I just thought, no, there's no way I'm leaving. And it was just, I knew that night was my night.
You knew it.
I knew it.
I've talked to certain fighters that say that. And it's funny too, because like I just talked to Spike the other day on the podcast.
He's such a
great guy. Yeah. And even I had Adrian Granados on, and both of those guys have fought like the creme de la creme and never got a world title. Yeah. And so like you're saying, like I knew, like this might never come around again.
Yeah, definitely, because David, I'm honest, like, where there's a lot of great fighters who don't get an opportunity.
Absolutely.
At a world title.
100%.
I say it to anyone, no matter how good you are, you need a little bit of luck in boxing, whether that be being with the right promotional team. You know, it's not me just saying it because we're here, but, you know, Eddie delivered massively for me.
Sure.
And you need a little bit of luck in life, whatever it may be. But certainly, if, like, with a world title shot, and I knew I'd had the shot, and rightfully so, I'd got the rematch because of the controversy first time round. But I knew then, like, I had to take the opportunity. I knew I had to take the opportunity.
That second Perez fight, like, the attack, because you hurt your ankle in the attack. Did you break your ankle? You broke your ankle, right?
My ankle was broken 3 places. My skull was fractured. And, they wasn't great injuries.
Yeah, and then, like, what was the time difference between the attack and the second fight?
So the attack was in the December. I was meant to originally fight in the January. So the attack was December. Then I fought in the July, the controversial draw. And then I won, like, so from the attack to winning a world title, it was 11 months.
Amazing that you healed like that.
I was like in an hospital on crutches.
Of course.
Stuff. Yeah. So it was some
sort of. Not the typical training camp.
No. It was, and like, obviously, having the fractured skull, whether I'd ever be allowed to fight again.
Of course.
Brains, you know, extended brain scans and stuff like that. So that was it. It was like, you know what it is? Like, you have to look at the positives as in, I was just lucky to be doing what I'd done, what I loved and stuff like that.
Amen.
Yeah.
How, so let's go back to the high part. How was that high? Was it just that, like, was it as good as you thought?
Yeah.
Was it better?
It was better.
Try to explain it to us.
I remember it like, you see when the referee counts out to 10, like gets there's a 10 count, you see sort of, I remember there's a bit like what Matchroom done where sort of the camera's on me and you can see me sort of like going, sort of, no, stay down. But I didn't know I was doing that. Yeah, yeah. But it was like the 10 seconds seemed like 10 minutes. And I remember letting out this like scream and there's a picture and it looks like I'm crying. I probably was crying, but it was like, I think it was like tears of joy. It was relief.
Yeah.
It was relief. It was happiness.
Yes.
It was sort of because I thought of like the amount of, you know, pressure or, you know, that I felt. And I thought, oh, I feel like I paid my mum and dad back. And do you know, people who was there and stuff, oh, this night will be remembered forever around these people. And that it meant the world to me. Do you know what I mean? It meant the world to me. So it weren't just like since the attack. It was from being like my mum getting on the bus with me, taking me training, making sure I was training and, you know, making sure that my mum and dad working extra hard to get me the right equipment or stuff like that to, you know, just to get me by, or like them going out the way, travelling to watch me and stuff like that. So it was just like, I think it was just a scream of relief, joy, the lot. There's about 10 different emotions in
just
one.
All at once.
Yeah, in one. But it was, when I say that, I know like there was great nights that, and that was one of them, or defending it, them feelings, the personal high. But hopefully now I can get those otherwise with fighters on my own. Like, for instance, Rhiannon, it's a proud moment for me on Saturday night with her. Do you know what I mean? I know she's going to be on early in the card.
Yes.
But still, I'm...
She's 3-0.
She's 3-0, yeah.
And, you know, one thing about her, which I wanted to talk about a little bit earlier as you were talking, because we were talking about Dylan Evans,
yeah,
which is interesting with Rihanna, is she's still a pharmacist, yeah? So yeah, she still has her day job.
She does, and I think the way... the world, like, you know, a lot of people spoke, you know, about COVID and stuff. She was on like the NHS ward. She right. was working right through it, coming to the gym in a scrub sometimes. And she's a great girl. And she's, for me, and hopefully we get to see it on Saturday, but she's a girl who has no business being on these kind of shows or sparring with the girls she's sparring, your Natasha Jonas, your Chantel Cameron, other good girls. She's not had an amateur fight, David. She's had like 7 white collar fights.
Yeah.
She's had the 2 pro fights since, but I believe she's one of those girls where she's a natural athlete. Like, she can sprint, she can throw weights around. Whatever she does, she seems to be good at, but she's a great girl as well. She's a great girl, and she doesn't look like what people would stereotype usually to go about. She's a good girl, well educated, and but she's if it was about money, she could go and earn money. You know, she's got degrees. She's
sure.
Got, she wants to box.
What do you think is her impetus for fighting? How did you guys meet?
So what happened was, I'll be honest. So her manager, Steve Wood, rang me when I was on holiday with the lads. Every year we go on holiday with the lads. And the first day is always an heavy one. Okay. I'm not a big drinker. But I'll go away every year with the lads. I'll have a good few drinks. So the next morning, I was up a little bit early. I was getting a coffee and that. And I was a little bit hungover. And Steve's rang me and says, oh, the 2 fighters without a trainer, they'd love to come and train with you. And I'll be honest, it was a little bit like James Moorcroft, the other lad. I knew he was a lovely lad. And I went, Steve, do you know what? I'm back next week. I'll do a session with him and I'll help him till they find someone.
And it stuck.
And a session or 2 in, I saw how much there was like, and I was saying to them, listen, we'll do a week. So you might not like it.
Right.
They loved it. And, you know, and the energy I was getting back from them, and I thought, how can I, if these are wanting to give their time to me like this, then how can I not give them the time back?
100%.
And that was it. And I just think,
you know, they say giving's better than receiving.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways it is. Well, yeah. Especially in boxing, if you're talking about punches, it's definitely always better to give than receive, but, right?
Yeah, I believe
but as a trainer too.
Yeah. And it's there now. It's someone who's never actually had 2 pro fights before she came in. So she's had one under me a few weeks back. And I believe, you know, she looks the part, and I've got massive, you know, hopes for her. I don't want to put pressure on shoulders, you know, after someone with no kind of amateur background. But I've got really high expectations. Or if she fights, I would know she can. She'll take some stopping.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, it's funny because obviously you're Mancunian.
Yeah.
And Campbell Hatton.
Yes.
He's a guy that also didn't have a big amateur career. He's a Mancunian. And he's on these massive cards.
Yes.
He's been getting a little bit of...
Yeah. And do you know what it is? I feel sorry for Campbell because it's hard. Like, you're talking about his father as in one of the most popular fighters in British boxing history.
100%.
And people are always going to... You'll have young fighters and it's just the way it is, sort of. Like, when my little brother was amateur, you'd have kids who just want to fight him because he was my little brother and they'd think...
Right.
So Campbell's sort of the same. I remember Campbell's first or second fight, he boxed a kid and the kid come down with two coach loads of fans, you know, just over an amateur bout. And there's always huge pressure on him. But I think what you've got to give Campbell, like, he doesn't have to box. He doesn't have to box. And he's like, people talk about his last fight. And, you know, was he a bit fortunate to get the decision? Yeah, he was. But he wasn't the judge. You know, he was in there and he is going to show improvement, but you can see there's so much pressure on that young lad's shoulders. But then it's hard because with that name, people go, he should be on smaller shows. He should be on smaller shows. But
sure,
it's also this thing. A lot of those people saying it, I want to say to them, listen, if you had the father he had, if you got offered the platform that he gets offered, the wages, the sponsorship deals, would you then be saying it? That's all I say. So I think, you know, you've got to cut him a little bit of slack. And he's a young lad on his own journey. It's going to take time. He's not his father. His father was a very unique fighter, but he's trying to be the best Campbell Hatton that Campbell Hatton can be.
You know, let's just talk for a second about the Urquiaga fight.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm bringing it up is because you just talked about the Campbell Hatton decision.
Yes.
So your last fight was against Frank Urquiaga in Manchester. And obviously after you won the world title, Barroso, you knocked him out. There was Ramirez, some there was Dow fights, Jordan. Yeah. Yeah, dude, you fought Linares twice.
Linares,
Ricky Burns. Yeah. I mean, a lot of fights.
Yeah.
Lomachenko.
Yes.
A guy named Vasily Lomachenko. You guys might have heard of him. But the final farewell was against Frank Urquiaga. Yeah. Tell me about that.
Okay, so do you know that fight? What's mad, David, is? And this isn't, I never want to be disrespectful to Frank, because I don't mean to be like, I say it sometimes and I've stayed in shape since retirement, but I've hardly boxed. But I genuinely believe, I think I could fight, you know, maybe this Saturday and I'd look so much better. Like, a lot of people thought I was fortunate that night. And it was one of them. Do you know, when I watched the fight, I've hardly watched the fight back, to be honest, but it was, listen, it was a close fight and I could not have argued if it went against me. I think Matthew Macklin, my mate, he had me one down. So then a few people like, oh my God, it's a robbery.
Right.
But then if you see one round different, we're even. But I think they might have argued the scorecards, how they had me way up. But regarding that, really, I checked out my career long before it. And I think I said to Eddie, I was like, oh, I don't know what to do. And then Eddie just offered me, you know, I'm coming back to Manchester. I thought, you know what, I'll have my last fight. And then it was crazy. I just said it automatically. I gave him a word to it. And it was mad. Like, not long after I'd done it, I thought, I don't really, I'm just not up for this fight. Or I've never had that before in my career.
Sure.
Or in my life. And then Frank, I don't know if I overlooked Frank a little bit as well. I possibly did. I'm never doing that.
Right.
And I just didn't have the fear factor. And there was a lot more emotions involved. It being
absolutely
the last fight. And
yeah, it was a strange time. I remember it. I remember that fight week.
It was. And it was just really strange.
Because, again, you're such a beloved character in not just British, especially Manchester, but in British boxing, you know. And you have a great story. You're one of the good guys of the sport. And so it was a lot. It must have been a very heavy week.
It was. And then on the day, I was getting loads of texts and there was lovely texts saying, oh, you know, I've had some of the best nights of my life following you. And it was a little bit emotional.
But you got a job to do.
Yeah, but then I still had a job to do.
There's a guy trying to take your head off.
Yeah. And you know, when the fight was over, it was mad. Like, I was really disappointed in my career, but then we were really disappointed in my performance that night.
Right.
I was happy in my career. But
sure.
I was really disappointed in my performance that night, but it was mad like half an hour later. I was there, David, and it just, that's when I knew it was time, where I just thought, thank God it's all over. Like, I was just happy it was all over, and I didn't watch the fight back hardly. I didn't speak about it. I was just happy it was done. Do you know, that chapter in my life was closed. And
do you feel like that now?
Yes, I've never once, people always say to me, like, they go, are you going to come back? You look, and I go, I'll never come back, like, because I've literally, David, so it's almost 2 years ago. 2 years ago next month, I've probably done 3 minute rounds. I've probably done about 12 3 minute rounds in 2 years. Once was just a bit of technique work with the lads, once on the bags, and I feel bad saying it because I trained as hard as anyone, but I've just not, it's not that I've not got it in me because I could get fit and stuff, but it's crazy where it's just, that part of my life's done. Do you know, that part of my life's done. I had some great times. I'm really satisfied. I'm thankful for the nights that I had. But
forward motion.
I say it all the time, boxing, you can't stay in it too long. And like I said, although I massively underperformed that night and I could have continued at a good level, it's dangerous. And I don't want boxing taking more from me than I took for boxing.
I'm wondering, you know, it's funny. Sometimes someone wins a world title and they become a better fighter.
Yeah.
Because they know they belong. Sometimes you can win a world title and you can become a little soft because you're like, I've hit the top. I've reached my goal. I've hit my Everest. Yeah. I've seen the mountain. You know, like Darren Barker talks about it. Like after he beat Gil.
He knew something changed. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just, that fire wasn't really there. It was kind of like, that was what he wanted. He got it. And it was just, did you feel like that after the press fight? I mean, because
no,
you had some gnarly fights.
Yeah.
I mean, so Burns, Linares twice, Lomachenko.
I just wanted those highs. And I probably just kept chasing those highs again, you know, thinking that. But I wanted to just like, continue to fight the best names, and that's what I wanted to do. And then it was almost, you know, with the Lomachenko fight, you know, I'd had a good camp on that, but now I look back, I was on the decline, you know, before that, and then in the build-up. And it, again, David, I'm not suggesting the result would have been different. I'd done a few things wrong, like not like I had a good camp, but and then probably should have done a few things different in the fight to give myself a chance. I might have got beat earlier.
Yeah.
However, I knew sort of after it, That was it. I knew, like, the next morning I went for a coffee with Joe and that and my team around me. I was like, yeah, you know, that's it. I think that's it. And then
do you think you should have stopped after Lomachenko?
Yeah, I shouldn't have really fought in Manchester now, but at the time I thought it was a good idea. But
I'm still kind of glad you had that night. It was a great night, man.
It's no, David, thank you. And it's like, it was, listen, you don't have regrets. I don't regret having the night, but like, sure, I could have easily sort of wrapped up them. But I just think it's one of them. Now I just stay fit. And listen, in time, whether I dealt fighters out with bits of sparring, I just don't think about it. I love coaching and helping the other fighters try and become the best that they can possibly be.
Sure. That's great, man. I love it. I'm really glad you're here this week.
No, thank you. I look forward to catch up. I'm sure I'm here from tomorrow, a few days here in the fight. I love being around the fights and sort of, you know, the fight will tell, the bubble, which you don't have no more, the bubble, but you know what I mean? I love it.
And we love seeing you. Are you okay to answer a couple of fan questions?
Of course, yeah.
All right, let's see what we got here. Okay. Joey Clayton asks Anthony, what was the most grueling fight of your career?
The most grueling fight of my career. Grueling fight. I think, do you know what it's at? The Dal Jordan fight was tough because he was a very good fighter. And then my urine after the fight was like Ribena, it was like Vimto and all that. It was brutal. But
he just taxed you to the body.
Yeah. I think that was tough. If you was watching it, you wouldn't have thought, oh, it was brutal, but it was hard on the body.
I remember that fight too.
Yeah, it was. It was. And probably after that, I probably might have started declining. You don't know, those fights that take a little bit out of you. Maybe that one was that. But
it's almost like the Chavez Meldrick Taylor fight.
Yeah,
just going to the body.
And I think the most brutal one in my career was again probably a similar result. with the Yoreen, but the Gavin Reese fight was, I remember being tired for a good week or two after it.
Yeah.
Gavin Reese was a strong, strong little man and former world champion, but I remember after it, I felt like on the line was me becoming where I could stay being a full-time professional. I had a little boy on the way, and it was a real important night in my career. So sure. There was a lot that come with it.
Yeah. Also, you had the derby. You were talking about different derbies that you had. Kieran Farrell.
Yeah, that was another hard fight. Kieran's a good guy, and he's
BEM, by the way.
Yes,
let me add Kieran Farrell, BEM. Yes.
Kieran's a very good fighter, and that was another night in my career where what happened after it like stayed with me for a long time. And
yeah.
It was, but yeah, that was sort of another time. So, you know, when I look back sort of in my career, I remember going back to my partners who was living at a mum and dad's at the time, but yeah, it could have all very easily been all over that night.
Absolutely. Tough sport, man. Okay. Robert Brand asks Anthony, any regrets in your career? The Flanagan unification should have happened?
Yeah, I agree. I sort of just said this with Eddie then, and Eddie sort of said the same thing. It was like, but it was hard. Like, I liked Terry. It was sort of unique. Terry was a few years younger than me in school, in the same school. We both ended up becoming world champions, and we both wanted the fight, but, you know, I was with Eddie. Terry at the time was with Frank Warren, and then they'd offer us the fight. I don't mean Terry. Like, they would offer us the fight when I would have had to have given up my world title instead of fighting my mandatory challenger in Barroso. So it was like, I can't give up my world title to come and fight on your show. It's just not right. And then after that, there was times when we offered them the fight. And, you know, I know Terry wanted to take it, but then he got talked out of it from his promotional team. But that would have been a great fight, you know, for Manchester. It would have packed out the arena. You know, Terry's a good guy, and I think we'll always, now and again, I bump into him when we're out with our mates. We've got a lot of mutual friends, and we'll always talk about what would have happened and stuff like that. But, yeah, I would have, that's the one regret in my career. Well, not regret, but I wish would have happened.
You wish it would have happened. And the MEN, I don't know, you know, if, like, you know, I've done fights all over the world. There are a lot of venues that I love, but I'm telling you, I think it's one of my favorites, just hands down. It's a special arena, and the Mancunians on a big fight night, like, they come out and they're loud, and it's just there's so much energy in that place.
I love it. It's
I love it.
My favorite, one of my favorite places in the world, really is, because, like I said, as a kid, David, I was there watching your Ricky Hattons, watching other fighters, some of the greatest British fighters.
So
I love the place. I love the place, and it's mad. Every time I go and there's a concert on, I can't help but think, probably my own ego, remember this there. And,
Of course. But it's been a lot of great nights in there.
Yeah, I've had some of the best nights of my life in there.
Great place. Okay, let's see. Kayla_Louise86 asks Anthony, what do you make of Campbell Hatton's start to life as a pro? He's getting some unfair stick, in my opinion. Well, we kind of touched on that.
Yeah, we touched on that. But again, just like, he is getting some unfair stick, I think, because of the second name and the platform. He said, listen, you could argue, could he go on a bit earlier in the bill? Yeah, he could, but he's just a young lad who's trying to improve, and there's people comparing him to his dad and shooting him down, and, you know, just give the lad time to develop. He's not got the...
He doesn't have that amateur pedigree.
Doesn't have the amateur pedigree that his dad had. People forget just how good of an amateur his father was, and it's going to take time. And again, it's just Campbell Hatton being the best Campbell Hatton that he can be.
That's really it.
To Ricker.
You know, it's hard. I think the life of a fighter, you know, when a lot of people go to their job, you know, they're in front of their boss or their coworkers. But when a fighter goes to his job, he's in front of the world.
Yeah. And that's it. And do you know what else as well? Like, you might get like a football player or something who has a bad game. He's 3 or 4 days later, he gets a chance
he
to
can
put
redeem
it right.
A fighter. Very few chances.
It's a few months or, you know, or longer sometimes. And that stick, then that pressure all builds up. So it's I agree with Kayla. It's like it's very tough on the lad. I think people just give him a little bit of patience, and people talk about him building up away from the cameras, but it's not that easy.
Yeah. Okay, let's see here. I think we have the last question is from Big Fred the Red. He asks Anthony, who should be the next Man U manager?
It's listen, I'll never ever call for
Anthony Crawler.
It's hard because I love Ollie, but there's no denying that the tide's turned a little bit where people, he'll always be a Manchester United legend, but people now are starting to question, is he the right man for it? If Ollie was to go, I think it needs a big, you know, kind of a big presence. Someone like Zidane. Or Conte. Listen, we could have anyone. Zidane. For sure. Zinedine Zidane, yeah. ZZ, some player. One of the best, I think one of the best ever player, and he's been an unbelievable manager, proven already. It'd be great to have him there.
And he's got the Scottish, the headbutt.
Yes, he has the Glasgow kiss. I'll never forget that. Against Italy in the World Cup final.
Yeah,
he's a bit of a
fighter. I've seen some beautiful Glasgow kisses.
That was a tough one. That was right up there.
Yeah. Ant, love you, brother. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, too.
Yo, to the fans out there, don't miss the battle for Liverpool this weekend, the big derby. Smith and Fowler, it's going
to
be great. Catching on the zone. And until then, David Diamante checking out from Matchroom Radio.